Welcome to Dealmaker Diaries, where business meets opportunity. The podcast that takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of commercial real estate and mergers and acquisitions. Join us as we unravel the secrets behind the rise and fall of industry titans, explore lucrative investment strategies, and dive deep into the captivating stories that shape the ever-evolving landscape of business. Through in-depth interviews with industry experts, CEOs, and influential thought leaders, we uncover the hidden gems of commercial real estate, unveil the secrets of lucrative property acquisitions, learn how to identify emerging markets, and gain a deep understanding of the negotiation tactics that seal million-dollar deals. But that's not all. Dealmaker Diaries also delves into the thrilling world of mergers and acquisitions. Discover the stories behind high-profile mergers, hear from the masterminds who orchestrated billion-dollar transactions, and gain exclusive insights into the strategies and intricacies of successful M&A deals. Whether you're a seasoned investor or a curious listener, Dealmaker Diaries offers a treasure trove of knowledge, empowering you to make informed decisions, spot lucrative opportunities, and navigate the ever-changing tides of the commercial real estate and M&A markets. Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe today and let us be your trusted guide in the fascinating world of commercial real estate and mergers and acquisitions.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare to be inspired by our next guest on Dealmaker Diaries, an individual whose journey seamlessly intertwines the worlds of technology, finance, and health. With an impressive background in IT, Chrisman mastered the art of AI programming, all while strategically navigating the dynamic landscape of investments from stocks to real estate, venture capital to solar farms, and even a bold venture into Texas oil wells. But here's where the story takes an exciting turn. Over the last 3 years, Chrisman has pivoted, stepping away from the last fast-paced IT world to focus on a mission of universal significance, health research. Frustrated by the surplus of health advice without a solid foundation in evidence, Chrisman is on a mission to evaluate life interventions, quantifying how we can mitigate the causes of premature death and identifying the most effective lifestyle changes for enhanced health. Now, you might be wondering, what does this mean for ambitious dealmakers and entrepreneurs like you? Well, Chrisman's unique journey isn't just a tale of personal transformation. It's a blueprint for those who dare to venture into uncharted territories. Today, we have the privilege of uncovering the layers of Chrisman's diverse and impactful journey, a journey that holds valuable lessons for dealmakers seeking to make strategic decisions in both their business and personal lives. From programming AI to navigating the complexities of investments, and now pioneering groundbreaking research in health, Chrisman embodies the spirit of an ambitious entrepreneur who doesn't shy away from challenges, but rather embraces them as opportunities for growth and innovation. Join me in extending a warm welcome to our guest, Chrisman, as we delve into a conversation that promises to spark ideas, ignite ambition, and leave you with the insights that resonate with the hearts of dealmakers and entrepreneurs worldwide. Welcome to the Dealmaker Diaries podcast. Chrisman, welcome to the show. It's great to have you join us today.
Thanks, Donald. It's great to be here.
Awesome, awesome. So yeah, Chrisman, we've known each other for quite some time. I mean, both of us are surrounded by, I think, some high caliber, highly ambitious people. And I thought what you're doing now really creates a nice segue. I think a lot of us, as we chase deals and strive to provide for our families, we tend to a lot of times sacrifice our health in doing so, forgetting that health is probably the greatest part of wealth we can have. So I thought it's great to have you on to talk about longevity, health, and exercise, and how that integrates with lifestyle, ambition, and careers as well. So, I mean, before we hop in, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your background?
Thanks. Well, that's exactly the transition that I've made. So, started many years ago in Tokyo and was very serious about investing and real estate and other things, and got to the point where I felt like my financials were solid. And at that point, decided that I really wanted to focus in on my health. The initial thing was that my father was getting very old and doing starting a vegan type diet. And I initially just started out with going, okay, vegan. I don't know, there's some goods and there's some bads about that, right? There's some B12 deficiencies and other things. And so I started to look into that and say, okay, well, is it really healthy? And as I looked into it, I started to go into the what causes premature death or doesn't cause premature death and what really gives you a longer life. And then I just kept going. So I've spent the last couple of years doing research on what actually makes the biggest difference in all-cause mortality and giving you a longer life with the things that we can do at hand. So there are kind of drugs and advanced things and science continues to go on, but what in our daily lives, the food that we eat and the exercise that can we do to give ourselves a longer and healthier lifespan has been my focus for a while.
Okay. So can you walk us through your transition to focusing on health research? What prompted? I know you talk about your father and his what he was getting into. Were there any other events or changes that prompted this shift in your career path or in your trajectory?
Yeah, there were a couple of things. I mean, I had my own surprises for as I was going through my career. At one point, I had transitioned from a job where I was kind of busy running from site to site and serving offices throughout Tokyo. And then I moved into a desk job. And after moving into the desk job and being there for 5 years or so, I remember I was out walking around in a park and saw a low-hanging branch and thought, oh, I'm going to do a chin-up. I remember as a kid, I could do like 15 of those, right? And I couldn't do one. I just like couldn't even pull myself up to a tree. And that was a bit of a wake up to realize that, okay, I need to put some more focus in here. So I've always liked it doing experiments. After that, I was like, okay, need to recover from this, and did a fairly intensive weightlifting routine to see how I could do that, to see how I could build back the muscle that I had lost. But really it was sort of realizing that as I was trying to figure out what was the most healthy, there's so much information out there on the internet and from friends and other places that it can be contradictory many times and difficult more than anything else to prioritize, right? So from my math background, for me, I was like, okay, well, here's a laundry list or a list of say 20 things that I could do that all seem healthy, but which of them would actually have the most benefit and which of them are like if you like that, go ahead, but it's kind of not really going to do that much in the big picture. So it was that effort of going through and trying to quantify and prioritize each thing that really had me start to realize that I think this is something unique and different to be able to say this is how much actual benefit you're going to get from this action. And one of my exercises, for example, I took a look at every single type of physical activity you could do and then quantified how many minutes of extra life you would get for 1 minute of activity. For instance, for walking, you might notice right now I'm on a walking desk. So I have a treadmill underneath my desk. For every minute of walking that you do up to 140 minutes of walking in a day, you get 2 extra minutes of life.
Wow.
Right. So it's a 2-for-1 payoff. So because oftentimes they say, yes, OK, if you exercise, of course, it's not actually that you live forever. It just feels like you never die because it's so painful. Right. you wish death would come faster. But actually, the exercise activities, they do pay off. And it's not that you've just spent that extra life doing exercise, but you actually get more life back than you put into the exercise. So it was going through these kind of things that had me digging deeper into it and starting to put together my blog, unaging.com. I've also presented at a TEDx, a Moltisanto presentation recently this year, and realizing that I think there's a lot of value that people could get here, learning more about what are the things they could do that are fairly close to their already lifestyle that will give them more health and longevity.
Yeah, as I was reading through your blog, one of the things I thought interesting when you talked about you and your brother going to get the body scans. And I get, and the doctor asked you, did you want to talk about it in private rather than in front of your brother? So how did that experience serve as a wake-up call for you, and how did it influence your decision to prioritize your health?
Yeah, that was one of the ones where I realized that it was oftentimes in comparison to my brother, as others with siblings might recognize. He's always been more focused on doing keeping himself physically fit, and realizing that because I had just been sitting behind a desk for a long time, that my bones were not as healthy as they should be for a middle-aged guy. So when I looked across my brother, who'd had fine results, but the doctor was like, do you want these results in private to me? I realized that I needed to look into that. So that's one of the times that I dove into the research, got back right back into the scientific studies to say, okay, who doesn't have issues with bone density? And it turned out that in that case, it was mostly the heavy weightlifters. So the process of putting shock into the muscles was one of the primary things that maintains the muscles, or sorry, the bones of the body, and that was the primary way to do it. So I spent about, I think it took me about 2 years or so doing heavy weight lifting, bench press, deadlifts, squats, pull-ups, kind of thing, and then was able to go back to the same scan for bone density, and was solidly within the middle of the range, as opposed to being on borderline osteoporosis.
Oh, wow. So yeah, so for those of us who don't know, including myself, what when you do a body scan, what does it encompass? I guess it gauges your bone density. Anything else that it takes a look at?
Well, this is a DEXA scan, which is a dual X-ray absorbometry. I'm not quite sure on that last word. So it's one of the ones where you actually lay down on like a mat, and then the thing X-rays your entire body to find how much bone versus muscle versus fat you have. So it's giving the full body scan, and then can tell you upper versus lower and other areas in your body. It's not entirely dissimilar to what you can get in Japan, where you get one of the Tanita kind of things where you put your hands on it, does electrical impedance. But this is much more accurate as far as giving you your actual bone density throughout your entire body. Everything was okay, except for at the time I was physically weak. My brother had a lot more muscle mass than I did, and he had stronger bones than I did.
And you guys are same age roughly?
Yeah, he's 2 years older. Yep.
Okay. And you also mentioned in your blog, I'm applying your optimization skills from AI training to fixing your health. So could you elaborate on the parallels between optimizing AI training and optimizing one's health?
So in the AI training, it gave me the opportunity to read a lot of studies. AI is mostly going through the latest research and information. So I was already pretty familiar with reading the basic studies on these kind of things. And then it was looking at not just getting sort of everything that you could do, eating blueberries or doing jumping jacks or whatever, or stretching, but rather looking at what actually had an impact. One of the things I talk about a lot in AI, when you're trying to train a model to do something, is they talk about ground truth. Like, are you really looking at the ultimate thing that you want to measure? And that's something that I applied to the health world to say, okay, there's so many processes in the body, right? And you've had things that have been look good for you and then weren't good for you, and bad things. The margarine was great and then it was terrible, and other things, right? And they're oftentimes looking at intermediate measures, such as, okay, well, this seems to have an effect on your cholesterol in this way, and we think the cholesterol is bad, and we think therefore that this is good, so if you take this thing. So fundamentally, I'm looking for something that gives end-to-end testing to ground truth, right? So these are generally epidemiological studies, which is to say a study where they look at 1,000 or 10,000 people, and they say, okay, what are your habits? And then they track them over 5 to 10 years and then find out how many of them live or die, right? So there's ground truth, right? Did the people die or not? And that's one of the things that I found to be most helpful with it, is to say, okay, well, some things might be good for you in one way or bad in another. To take the vegetarianism thing that I talked about at the start, vegetarianism is really good for cardiovascular issues, and it's also good for cancer. But then vegetarians and vegans tend to have a vulnerability to lung diseases and respiratory diseases. So it's sort of like there's the good and the bad of it. So that's why I'm looking at the all causes of premature death to make sure that the actions that I'm taking are giving me an overall improvement in life longevity. And then on the analysis side of it, I've tracked that all into an actuarial table to give an actual estimate for, say, okay, if we've reduced premature death by, say, 15%, how much additional life is that giving you according to what we best know from the longevity of human lifespan?
Okay. And you brought up veganism. I think that's a perfect segue to diet. So you mentioned a Harvard study also on your blog comparing the impact of nutrition and exercise on longevity. So how to define does influence your approach to balancing nutrition and exercise in your pursuit of a healthier life?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the specifics of how things help you is that there's benefit to a certain point, and then after that point, there's no more additional benefit for it. One of my a good example of this would be cashew nuts, right? Okay, cashew nuts are good for you, but if you look at like the components of it in the old model, where they look at like it has saturated fat, which is bad, it has fiber, which is good. So then you look at it and you say, okay, well, like 100 grams of cashew nuts will give you your total daily allowance for fiber, yay, and will also give you your what you should not exceed for your daily allowance of saturated fat, which is bad. And so the question is, okay, what does eating 100 grams of cashew nuts do for you? And the answer is those models don't work. The first 30 grams was fantastic. One of the healthiest foods, gram per gram, the healthiest food you can eat is any kind of nut. But then after that first 30 grams, there's no positive or negative effect either way on premature death. Right? So the additional fiber after that first 30 grams did nothing for you. And the additional saturated fat had no negative effect. It was just that first 30 grams. And that could be any kind of mixed nuts, although peanuts are not quite as good because they're not actually a nut, but that's a different thing. No. So it's each of the foods has sort of its own, and exercise as well, has a certain amount that's very healthy for you. And then after that, either has no effect or sometimes in the exercise or other things actually has a negative effect. So it's getting down to find what is the actual, not only what kind of food it is, how much benefit it gives for you, and how much do you need, really makes a difference in deciding what can give you the overall best effect.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept because I know you cycle and I run, so I have to wonder. I usually try to run 60 kilometers a week, but how much does that actually serve me? Would I be just as fine with 15 or 20 versus that 60? And the same with cycling, right?
Well, I might have done some cycling in the past, but I've registered for a charity event to run in the Osaka Marathon in February.
Oh, nice! Congrats.
Thanks. I haven't finished it yet. That might be a little bit early. I don't have much experience aside from just sort of a regular half hour run twice a week. But for instance, the evidence on running itself is fairly clear. So. The biggest and most important part of the health benefits of running, and that's aerobic exercise, is getting it regularly, once a week at least. And they find that if you're getting it regularly every week, then the benefit after that in terms of premature death, it doesn't really give you any additional benefit. It's not bad for you, but doesn't give additional benefit. So I know there are lots of other running benefits, and you could probably say more about that yourself as someone who runs that amount as far as like energy level and other things.
Yeah.
But in terms of premature death, basically the most important thing is just make sure that you run at least 15 minutes every week.
Yeah. So to that effect, the discussion around the benefits of exercise intensity and frequency is intriguing. So how did you reconcile the idea that moderate exercise frequency can yield comparable results to high frequency?
Well, it's very interesting. So for that one, the best indicator is the mitochondrial activity. So the mitochondria are little organelles inside of every one of your cells. It's where all of the energy, almost all the energy in your body is created. And they can do chemical analysis to show exactly how your mitochondria are changing in response to various kinds of exercise. And when they look at this, what they find is that basically your overall cardiorespiratory fitness is improved every time you run, assuming you run at least once a week. And it's a straight line for how much you run. So in other words, when I say straight line against the volume of how much you run, I'm saying that if you run, say, once a week for a year, and you compare that to someone who, say, runs three times a week for 4 months, the benefit over that time is going to be the same for both of those people. So basically, you're doubling your speed of improvement by doubling your increase. But there's a cap to this, right? I'm sure at this point, when if you're running 60 kilometers every week, you've probably hit the point where you don't see a whole lot of improvement from week to week, right?
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so you're basically at the maximum capacity you have. And if you're going into the long picture where you're not doing like a 4 week or 8 week study or something, then after a year of exercise, you're going to be pretty much at the maximum capacity of your VO2 max, your cardiorespiratory system, that is. Mm-hmm. So that's how they show that basically as long as you're having the regular exercise and don't fall back, you can get to the point where you are as cardiorespiratory fit as you can be.
Okay.
Right. So then in the high intensity interval training, this is now a different kind of exercise. So aerobic is sort of steady state, a run constant speed. And then high intensity is where you're running at 90% of your maximum heart rate. Right. So this is now where you're running for a short period. They had a very interesting study where they actually took a comparison of three different types of high intensity interval training. One of them were running four sets of 4 minute high intensity. So they're running as fast as they can for 4 minutes. One of them had four sets of 8 minutes of high intensity interval training and 4 minutes of 16 minutes of high intensity interval training. That's hard.
Yeah, that sounds hard.
And the interesting thing they found is that for the high intensity, if it's too long, it's no longer counts as high intensity. So the best group out of those three, which one do you think it was? Which one do you think got the most cardiorespiratory improvement?
I'll say the 4 minute.
The 4 minute? You're close. They got half as much benefit as the 8 minute.
Okay.
But the real interesting part of the study is that the 16 minute got no benefit at all. So despite doing four times as much as the 4 minute, because it was too long, their heart rate never got over 90% of the maximum heart rate. Whereas the 8 minute and the 4 minute both were like 91 or 93% of maximum heart rate. And they both got the increased cardiorespiratory fitness. Whereas the 16 minute, it's basically just kind of like a long jog at that point. You just can't go that fast that long.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. All right, Crispin, let's switch gears a minute. So as an optimizer, how do you apply your skills to ensure that your ambitious pursuits align with long-term health and well-being? Are there any specific strategies you've employed to optimize for both success and longevity?
Well, for me, it's all about the experimentation. So for instance, doing this marathon, I didn't think I was ever going to do a marathon. I did a VO2 max. VO2 max is the basically the speed with which you can take oxygen in, the velocity of oxygen intake that you can convert it then to energy. I had a VO2 max test, which an Apple Watch will give you an estimate for this, but I had the gold standard where they put a mask on your face that monitors all the oxygen you breathe in and all the carbon dioxide you breathe out, and then tells you actually how much oxygen you're consuming to convert into energy. And the test was, I've had a very good result on it. I was very proud. It said that I had a VO2 max of 55, which is very high, and said that I could run a marathon in 3.5 hours. And I said, that's great. Now I don't actually have to run a marathon. I just say, well, my time would be. But at the same time, I don't feel like I can just sit around and say, no, I'm really great and really in shape and everything. And then when a marathon comes around, go like, nah, I'm good. So I want to, this will be my first time ever and maybe my last time, we'll see. But it's, as far as like keeping the success side of things, it's about continuing the experimentation. Mm-hmm. So right now, my goal is to expand the research that I've done and then work with more people to do it. So I've taken on some coaching assignments, jobs with some people to help them optimize their health. And to make sure that it's not just theoretical, I'm concerned that if I do too much of the study thing, okay, well, sure, that's a great idea. But if it doesn't work with people in their own lives, then it's sort of just an academic exercise. So working with people on their own particular goals has been very rewarding for me to see what it is that fits within their lifestyle and gives them the increased health so that they can achieve more of what their success goals are.
Okay. Yeah, so and you're working with these people. So and I know ambitious and visual individuals always will often face high levels of stress. So how do you manage stress in your life? And have you found that stress management plays a role in your pursuit of both ambitious goals and a long, healthy life?
Well, I'm sure you're well aware from your running exercise. The exercise stuff is a really good way to shift gears. Right. Yeah, to give yourself sort of a different break for it. So one of the things, a lot of the physical exercises are going to have that benefit built into them. One of the other things, so I've been going through a tracking exercise as I go in towards doing the marathon. I've got my Apple Watch, which is measuring my heart rate. Then I've got my Whoop over here, and now I've got an Aura ring. I'm doing some testing and comparison. So I've got the three of them. So at least I can, if two of them agree, at least I assume that's true. Hmm. But part of that also is going through other things like sauna is one of the things that's very underappreciated,
yeah.
Right? It has excellent health benefits, but is another good way really to shift you sort of out of the stress of your other goals and things you're working on. And also gives you an exceptional benefit in terms of all cause of reduction of premature death and other things. So the working on health, although people can be competitive about it, myself included, especially as I'm getting ready to run a competitive race like a marathon, in general, the exercise and the other things are going to give you more relaxation and more of an ability to sort of step away and recover from the other things that you're doing in life. So I find it to be very complementary that way.
Yeah. Have you started? So I assume you've started your training for your marathon. You're doing your long runs on the weekends, going from 10 to 12 to 14 and go back a few.
Yeah. It's just the race is February 25th. So I've got a 16-week training plan. And I just finished my first week, so I haven't done much of it. In fact, yesterday was my first 16-kilometer run. And so I'm feeling a little creaky today, but the time was good, and I got myself some super fast shoes, some marathon shoes to try.
Yeah, I think if you get through the training, if you get through the training, the marathon is a given. I think the training is always harder than the actual marathon, from my experience, and it's been a long time since I've done one, maybe 20 years. But
okay,
I'm sure you've heard the stories like. You always hit that wall around mile 20, 21, and you're like, why the hell am I doing this? I'll never do this crap again. But then when you finish, you're like, oh, where's the next one? I'm going to do one in Honolulu or Chicago. I'm going to do Paris. Like, you're always going to do the next one. But yeah, it's that wall you hit like, oh, my God, what was I thinking?
Yeah, that's what I'm nervous about. I mean, especially it's my first marathon. The story of people who prepared for marathon, you know, we're targeting this time or whatever, and we're pretty sure they can make it. But then when they got to the marathon, we hit the wall or bonked or whatever, right? And suddenly felt like, oh my God. So I'm doing my training fairly seriously. I've already got my 16 plan laid out, 16 week plan with the distances every single week increasing until I get to around 32 kilometers is the top for the plan.
That's the most you're doing. But the last rest is up to you, right? That last 10K is pretty much up to you. And
Right.
at that point, it's all mindset. So I'm sure you'll have no problem. It's just all how you can lie to yourself. You have like 10 more miles, but oh, I just have five more. But I just keep lying to myself, and
That the
you're
key, huh?
good.
Okay.
Just like.
I did the Spartan race here in Japan about 10 years ago. And that was pretty fun. I trained fairly seriously for that as well. I had my Fuji Mountain walking sticks that I was using to practice for the javelin. So I was throwing them at trees in the park a couple times. So I knew how to throw a javelin for the Spartan race. I think the preparation, I hope it's enough. But we'll see. I've got a lot to learn between now and then.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll do fine. So Chris, when milestones. So I'm sure with your training, there's you definitely have milestones you want to hit. So in the context of setting goals, have you incorporated health-driven milestones into your planning? And how do these milestones complement or enhance your overall sense of achievement?
So it's one of the things that's challenging about health, because especially when you're talking about premature death and other things, it's as long as you're alive another day, you've hit the milestone, right? Sort of like you, if you until you die, it's you're still on the path. Some of the things that I do are very difficult to measure because I'm looking in terms of all-cause mortality. Like the best supplement I know. In fact, the only supplement that I bother taking is something called glucosamine, which you might be familiar with as a knee medicine. But when they looked at glucosamine, because I have a lot of data, and it was a UK study that showed that people who are taking glucosamine have benefits far beyond just having improved knee health. It actually counteracts some of the specific issues with respiratory diseases. And they
Oh,
found
really?
about a 15% reduction in all-cause mortality and premature death from taking a glucosamine supplement, which has zero side effects of any kind. Well, virtually, I can't say zero, but almost no issues with that. But the thing is, taking a glucosamine pill doesn't give you any, you don't feel any better. You're going to feel way better after a run than you will from taking a glucosamine pill. So in the light of that, the benchmarks that I need to set are things that look at, okay, here's the list that I have, and it has to be said of what do I have as my expected longevity for the things that I've done. So that's why I tip put such an emphasis on looking at this is what, given your habits, how much coffee you drink, how much exercise you get, how much you walk a day, right? Given that, your expected lifespan is how I set where my goals are. And the good news is that if you're doing a reasonable a number of these things in a focused way, and this is where the targeting comes in, if you're getting at least 15 minutes of running in every week, you're doing high intensity interval training, you're doing steady walking and other things, and eating a healthy diet, then I believe it's achievable to get to around 100 years of lifespan. And I'm hopeful that in the future we'll get additional benefits or research that'll find us an even longer way to live. But that then covers most of the lifespan. And then after that, you don't need to worry as much about the small things. As you get down the list, the impact is fairly small. So by setting your benchmark, your goals on sort of the overall quantification of how much you should get from it, and making sure that you do those things, I find that's the best way to kind of move forward.
And the last thing I wanted to cover before we hop off, well, before we hop into our lightning round, is genetics into your health. So if you're coming from a family with lots of health problems, be a diet like my family, a lot of diabetes, there's cancer in there, there's obesity. Have you found that exercise can help you counter or buck the trend of sickness and illness? In your genealogy.
Absolutely. So these things are all based against the average field, and each of them give you benefit from that. So It's interesting because any one of those things, like if you look at cancer, if you look at cardiovascular issues, right, like heart attacks and other things, even if you take out cancer, it only adds about 2 years of lifespan. If you cure cancer, it would only add 2 years of life. Similarly, if you were to cure all heart attacks and cardiovascular issues, it would only add about 2.5 years of life. So the aging process is bigger than both of those, right? It's bigger than the diabetes. And also, even overweight, until you get to the really heavy side of obese, it doesn't have that much of an impact. It's really about slowing down your aging, and that makes the biggest difference. And the things that are reducing your premature death are the things that really are slowing down the overall aging process. So even if you're coming from a short slate as far as the family background, these are the things that are going to delay all of those things together. So, and I find that across many of the things that I look at when I research, okay, I'm looking at walking or I'm looking at running. What does it do for you? And many of them are like, it reduces cancer, it reduces cardiovascular, it improves blood pressure, right? You see them effects across the board because what it's really doing is it's bringing you to the unaging point where you're just slowing down the aging of your body. So it is beneficial with whatever slate that you've been given.
Yeah, so it sounds like mobility is probably one of the key drivers in stopping the aging process, right? Because I think you can see like a lot of people when they retire and they stop being active, that's when you hear about these people, they'll die 6 months or a year after they retired, or after you just start sitting around. But versus the people who stay active, they're traveling, they're doing this, they're out walking, they're running. Like, I'm sure you know, Mike, they do the caged MMA route over at Harry's Gym. And there was an 82-year-old guy in there one time I went to see it, and I was like, I was amazed. I mean, I know people 10 years younger than him who are on walking sticks, and this guy is bouncing around the ring, 82. And I was like, wow, that clearly shows that, you know, exercise and mobility just play a key driver in keeping you alive.
Wow. Yeah. Absolutely. That's one of the big things of the physical thing is keeping the movement.
Yeah.
Makes a very big difference.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let's hop into a lightning round before I let you hop off, Chrisman.
Okay.
So what's the first thing you do in the morning to set the tone for the day?
First thing in the morning is I get up and I stand onto my Withings scale and find out where I am for my weight and body fat. And the Withings scale then also gives me, has a heart rate monitor kind of built into it. So it tells me what my heart rate is for the day.
And it's called Withings scale?
Yeah, it's short for wireless things. Why things?
Okay.
Yeah, so it's wirelessly uploaded. So I have a website that gives me my history over the past. I've been using it now for probably 7 years or so. So I can see my weight as it goes over, and if I'm getting heavier or whatever, I think, geez, I'm really big after Christmas. Does this always happen? Yeah, it always happens. Right. Okay. How long does it take me to get it off? Okay, I got this. Right. So it gives me a good record and a baseline.
Yeah, as we enter Thanksgiving and holiday season. Yeah, right.
Yes.
All right, so any specific health or fitness app that you swear by?
Let's see. The Apple Watch is so key. As I said, I'm doing testing right now on both the Whoop, which is a band, and also the Aura, which is a ring. And I've just found I don't like them as much. I find the Aura ring kind of passive and it only gives you your heart rate. The Whoop also is basically heart rate only, maybe some oxygenation things. The Whoop I found to be very nanny-ish, saying today exercise more, tomorrow, you know, today don't exercise as much. And I'm always like, look, I've already got plans, man. Thanks for the feedback. But today, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Whereas I find the Apple Watch because it gives you your VO2 max. It's much more adjustable to set it to give you the feedback that you want. I find the Apple Watch to be the fundamental, the best app for overall health.
Okay. And one place you haven't been yet, but is on your bucket list?
Africa.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of mine as well.
I want to go on a safari or something. And I've been, I think, to every continent except for Africa. it's kind of out of the way.
Yeah, but yeah, I think definitely worth going. I know some people who've gone and swear by it. Uh-huh. All right, and what's your guilty pleasure when it comes to snacks?
Well, we just passed the season, candy corn.
Candy corn, really? Ah, I hate candy corn.
Yeah, Halloween candy corn, man. I don't know. It's like a childhood thing, but somehow one of my happiest moments is like a bag of like 2 pounds of candy corn. And somehow I feel it goes, like it gets... It goes down really well with a lot of milk too. So I'll have like a, you know, like a quart of milk and 2 pounds of candy corn. it's really good.
Can you find that here in Japan?
No, I've actually I've been trying to locate it. Somebody said it was like 7,000 yen to get like 2 pounds. I'm like, okay, I'm not that guilty.
Yeah, so I can imagine. You get exploited for stuff like that here in Japan.
Yep.
All right. A book that has had a significant impact on your life or perspectives.
I can pull that out of this tree right here. Here we go. Hidden amongst my trees. We've got How Not to Die. This is a book by a very good doctor named Dr. Greger. He does nutrition facts and other things. This is the book that started to talk about veganism is best in everything. And he's got a very deliberate focus where he believes that vegetarianism is the answer to everything. And so that book was one of the things that I first started to go into. Go like, well, really? And started to look at the base studies that he talks about. Uh-huh. And many times they support what he says and sometimes they don't. Like for some things, he'll talk about eating, like he eats... like half a kilo, like a pound of green vegetables every day. Wow. That's a lot of salad, man. Doesn't weigh much. When you're talking about a pound of salad, it's a lot. So as I looked into that to find out, is it really having an effect on premature death? It's been very, it's helped me define a lot of things that I was curious about and go into the research myself to find out whether it really had the benefit that he promised. Some of it's been, yep, I need to do that. And some of it have been like, no, that's overkill. So it's been very important for my overall health research. He's got a new book coming out next month, which I'm excited to read.
Okay. And can you share a quick productivity tip that keeps you on track?
Solid breakfast.
Solid breakfast?
Yeah. So the as I talk about all the health things, there's a lot of things that can be very healthy, like the 30 grams of nuts, whole grains, like an oatmeal or something, getting in some legumes, beans kind of thing. And going through your day and trying to grab all those things as you're going through business meetings and lunches and dinners and coffees and things can be challenging. So it's something I wasn't very good at when I was in college and other times. I'm just like, okay, wake up 5 minutes before class, bolt across, you know, to get into class or things. I didn't do for a long time. But I found that for productivity, as far as like then just setting a baseline of having the healthy diet and having taken care of that, just having a fixed breakfast that gives me like a half of everything that I need for the day, then sets me free just to do the other things or have whatever meeting I want to and eat whatever is on offer to focus on other things later in the day. So taking care of it first, I find to be very helpful.
Okay. And how do you incorporate mindfulness or relaxation into your routine?
So I was really interested in meditation for a while and practiced it. I've done some 10-day retreats. They have a couple places you can do it around here in Tokyo. Now what I find is that most of that comes in the time when I'm in the sauna. Hmm. That time is just naturally sort of a quiet breathing time. I go to the sauna after every run and then after my weightlifting things as well as the HIIT. And that's 12 minutes or so, and then cold bath, another 12 minutes. So it's on the order of an hour of sauna time for a week. And that's really when it gives me time to slow down and just focus on breathing and being where I am.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites as well. I go to Takao Sanguchi onsen out here, and they have a sauna. I'll do 12 minutes and then hop in the cold plunge for 5 minutes, and I'll do that like six times. It takes me like 2 hours, but I try to do that once a week. But yeah, it's great.
Nice.
All right. So any specific, outside of the marathon, any specific health or wellness goal that you're working towards in the near future?
For me, it's all about maintenance aside from this point. So I'm always interested in the experimentation. That's, I feel like I've gotten to a point where I'm quite happy with where I am. So my goals at this point are more for the people that I'm working with to try and help them improve. Sometimes I feel like an outlier. Sometimes I'm told that I'm weird. okay, that's great for you, but I couldn't do that. So at this point, it's not so much about my own goals as it is trying to find a way that I could make it accessible and available and interesting for other people to use within their lives to get benefit out of it.
Okay. All right, perfect. So perfect segue for our last one for you before we let you hop off. So in one sentence, what advice would you give to our listeners for maintaining a balance between ambition and health?
Stay active at all levels of activity, walking, running, high intensity, and strength training. Number one benefit.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, Chrisman, it's been great. Before we hop off, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, get some coaching, collaborate, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Look at my website, unaging.com. Lots of what I have found is written up there. I'm always putting up more content on it. And feel free to email me. Chrisman, spell it however you want, at unaging.com, and it'll get to me.
All right, perfect, perfect. All right, Chrisman, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it, chopping it up with you. Hope to have you back again soon.
Great. Thanks very much for having me, Han.
All right. Thank you, Chrisman. Well, folks, that wraps up another insightful episode of Dealmaker Diaries. We hope you enjoyed today's deep dive into the world of strategic dealmaking. Before we go, a quick reminder. If you like what you heard today and want to stay updated on all things deals, be sure to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. And hey, we love hearing from our community, so don't forget to leave us a review. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but also lets other deal enthusiasts discover the show. So whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, take a moment to share your thoughts. As always, thank you for joining us on Dealmaker Diaries. Keep those negotiation skills sharp. Stay tuned for more expert insights. And until next time, make those deals happen. This is Don Thomas signing off.